Hi everyone, welcome to the George Farmer podcast. I'm your host.
And I'm your co-host, Emma Farmer.
And today is the last episode of season one, episode 11. And it's all about everyone's favourite topic, algae.
Good old algae.
Yes, or algae if you're from the United States. A very important topic. It will probably be experienced by almost every fish keeper at some point in their fish keeping hobby. It is the number one reason people give up on the hobby, and you know that's a disaster, obviously, for everyone that's involved in the hobby. If you're in the industry or if you're a fellow hobbyist, you know we don't want people to give up on this beautiful hobby. So let's dive into the wonderful world of algae.
Okay, George, so I know you get a lot of questions about algae all the time. Sometimes people literally send you a text saying, or an email saying, how do I fight my algae, or how do I treat my algae? But it's never that straightforward, and there's lots of complexities that people can take into consideration. Yeah. So, but let's just start from the basics then. Let's just start from the beginning. So what is algae?
Algae is one of the oldest life forms on this planet. I think it came onto this planet shortly after bacteria, and consequently it's obviously evolved all of that time, and it's one of the most adaptable, one of the hardest to kill kind of living things on this planet. And that kind of is a problem because it can obviously adapt in our aquariums and it is quite hard to overcome. It can be a single cell organism, and it can be quite a complex organism. So if you think about seaweed in the ocean, this is a very complex form of algae. But then we can go right down to a very basic form of algae, like a single cell algae, something like green water, you know, in ponds or maybe some aquariums, the aquarium water can turn green. It's actually single cells of algae floating around, giving this green coloration. And there's literally tens of thousands of species of algae. Now, there's probably only around 10 or so that we commonly experience in the aquarium. And we'll discuss all of these in more detail later, how to prevent them and how to treat them as well. But just to say, in summary, algae is probably inevitable in the aquarium. But good news, there are very distinct steps that we can take to, one, help to prevent it. And then if it does get out of hand, if you haven't prevented it, then there are certainly ways that we can help treat it as well.
Okay, and can you expand on that then? So what are the different types of algae?
Probably the most common type that people will experience in the early days of their aquarium is brown algae, or another word for this is diatoms. And it's actually another single cell type of algae. It's brown in colour. It can grow as almost like almost loose sheets, or like almost like cobwebby kind of construction around the plants. It's normally very easy to remove manually with a toothbrush or just by rubbing the leaves with your fingers. And it's said to be caused by a basic imbalance of nutrients and also a new setup where the overall biological balance hasn't been established. And this form of algae is particularly common. I've heard that it thrives in a high silicate environment. There are anecdotal stories of people using silicate removal resins in their filter to help reduce this silicate, okay, which is said to be a fuel for this, specifically this type of algae. I don't know of any concrete evidence of that, and I've never actually done that technique myself, but it's just something that folk that are listening might want to look into more. The good news is, though, with brown algae, it is very easily remedied. All you have to do is just keep that aquarium running, do your water changes, focus on good plant health, and that brown algae will disappear on its own accord. It could take a couple of weeks, it could take a month or so. So brown algae is probably an algae that most fish keepers have heard of, most fish keepers have experienced. There are algae eaters that will happily eat that type of algae, but we'll talk more about algae eaters and why they're a mixed blessing, I would suggest, in the aquarium environment. We'll talk about those later in more detail. Other types of algae, really common types, are hair algae, and there are sub kind of categories of hair algae. We have what we call staghorn algae, which looks like horns of a stag, funnily enough. That's why it's called staghorn. When you look up close, it kind of comes up with this branching growth form. There's also spirogyra, which is another really stringy form of algae, which can form really long hairs going through the aquarium.
Normally, that's the cobwebby look as well.
Yeah, it can be, yes. And there's fuzz algae, which is another kind of green type of algae, which looks like little portions of fuzz, like hair. And then one of the kind of nemesis of most planted aquarium keepers and aquascapers is brown beard or brown brush algae, or commonly known as BBA. And this is a real problem for a lot of aquascapers, a lot of plant and aquarium keepers. It just seems to appear out of nowhere, and it is one of the most tricky algaes to kill and keep away for the long term. But we'll talk about that in more detail later as well. And then we have another type of algae, which is not actually an algae, or it's called blue-green algae. It's not actually a type of algae. It's actually a form of photosynthetic bacteria, but it exhibits some of the characteristics of algae. And it grows in sheets. It's like it's a blue-green colour, and it actually has a really distinctive smell. It's quite like an off-earthy, kind of mouldy smell, very distinctive, not very nice, and it can smother your aquarium really quickly, and it's quite a horrible type of algae. Thankfully, I haven't had to deal with it for many years, but it's still very common with a lot of fish keepers, and it actually, some people get it so bad that they just give up the hobby.
But how quickly does it take over your tank?
Depends on the algae, but blue-green algae can take over your tank in a matter of days. It can smother everything. It just is a really fast-growing algae, and the more light you have, basically, the quicker it grows because it's photosynthetic.
Okay.
Yeah, and it thrives in... It's quite unique, and it thrives in different conditions to most other algae, so this is why it's quite tricky to deal with.
So what's the root cause, George? Why do people get algae?
Algae is caused by lots of different things, and the two main things I would like to break it down into are poor plant growth and poor maintenance. So the focus of this podcast is planted aquariums and aquascaping, so we'll just deal with that kind of genre of the hobby. It is very important to distinguish the difference between a planted aquarium and a non-planted aquarium when we're dealing with algae, because algae is actually a lower form of plant. It exhibits many of the same characteristics as a regular plant. It's photosynthetic. It has to use carbon to grow. So if we think about algae and aquarium plants always in battle with each other,
mm-hmm.
algae is always almost there. It's waiting in the background, ready to punish you, unless you are focusing on decent plant growth. You have enough plants. Those plants are healthy. And that needs to be done in conjunction with good maintenance practice. Now, we talked about maintenance in episode 10 in quite some detail, so I would recommend that episode to listeners if they haven't checked that out yet. So if any of those things are wrong or not good enough, so you have poor plant growth, or you don't have enough plants, or you have a lack of maintenance, then absolutely, 100%, you will get algae. There's no denying it. So algae is very, very common in the early stages of an aquarium's life. Everything is out of balance. The plants haven't had the chance to establish themselves yet. This can leave the door open to algae. The whole system isn't balanced. You know, there may be minor ammonia spikes, which are a known algae trigger. This can come from a new soil substrate, or maybe the filter isn't quite mature enough and you've added some livestock, and that can trigger a tiny ammonia spike. Not enough to do any damage to the livestock, but certainly enough to trigger the algae growth. And, you know, it's worth reiterating that algae and plants are very similar. They need food, they need nutrients to grow. And actually, one of the biggest nutrients that algae can utilise is ammonia. Now, plants love ammonia too, but anecdotal evidence suggests that algae can use even the tiniest little ammonia spike to really, you know, trigger an algae bloom. So this is why in a new setup, algae is really, really common. And what we have to do in a new setup, and we talked about this in the maintenance and other episodes, we do frequent and large water changes in those first 4 weeks in particular. You know, we're talking a daily water change of at least 50% for the first week, every other day for the second week, every third day for the third week. And then after 4 weeks, after just setting up your aquarium, you can go to 150% water change once a week. And these are really, really important steps to help reduce the risk of algae. That needs to be done in conjunction with really focusing on super healthy plant growth. And you also need to have enough plants to start with. And ideally, some of those plants should be fast growers. So the faster the plants are growing, the healthier those plants are, the less risk of algae we get. Now, often we will use what we call helping plants in the initial stages of an aquascape. So they might not be the final plant choice that you want in the long term, But just to help with this initial battle with algae, we put in what we call fast-growing weeds, and they're normally a really easy fast-growing stem plant, something like Limnophila sessiflora or Heteranthera zostafolia, Hygrophila siamensis 53b. These are all easy and fast-growing stem plants, which are a great way to help prevent algae because they're growing really quickly and they're kind of using up the light and the nutrients and all the other things that that algae needs, so the algae doesn't stand a chance.
And if I was to recycle some plants from a previous aquascape, would those established plants in a new setup help with the fight against algae?
Absolutely, yeah, and that's a really good point because those established plants from another aquascape have already adapted to your water chemistry. So they'll begin growing right away in your new setup. And there's another good point. When you're buying your aquarium plants, especially if you're buying them fresh from the store, from the shop, they're often supplied in their emerge state, where they're grown out of water hydroponically in the greenhouse. This means that when you put them in your aquarium, it has to go through a transitional period where it adapts to its underwater growth. And during this period, the plant is using a lot of its energy into actually changing form rather than growing. And because of this transitional period, actually that's leaving the door open a little bit to algae because it's not growing, it's just kind of changing. Mm-hmm. So it's only like the growth of a plant that's really helping to fight off this algae. So that's a really great point. Other really good helping plants would be floating plants because these serve a couple of purposes. One, because they're floating, they're shading the light somewhat, so that's going to help limit algae growth. And they're also very near the light source. Obviously, they're floating on top of the water, so they're nearest the light. And also, they have unlimited access to carbon dioxide in the air because they're floating. Mm-hmm. So the carbon dioxide levels that they can use is a lot higher than in the aquarium, even if we're injecting CO2, which we've talked about in a previous episode as well. So floating plants, fast-growing weeds, these are all great additions to a new aquarium, especially to help prevent algae.
And is that also sometimes why you wait a week or two or maybe longer before you add your livestock, your fishes, to your new aquascape?
Absolutely. That is one of the main reasons. We need to ensure that the aquarium system is healthy and safe. You know, you might want to be maturing that filter. You want to make sure those plants are growing so they have the ability to use any ammonia or nitrite that will have been a consequence of the fish waste. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you want to wait at least 2 or 3 weeks usually in a new setup before adding any livestock.
But if I did add the livestock
right away,
that would probably increase my risk of algae.
It would, absolutely, because the fish are going to be producing ammonia. And those plants might not be able to use that ammonia just right at the beginning because they haven't fully adapted to your aquarium water. Just going back to the adaptation of plants, it's a good opportunity to talk about the tissue culture plants, especially the Tropical 1-2 Grow. These are grown in special cups in the laboratory conditions, and they're actually grown in a nutrient-rich growth media. Often it's a liquid. So actually those plants are readily adapted to grow underwater. So for this reason, I always like to use the Tropical 1-2 Grow in particular because they're readily adapted to grow underwater. So you can plant 100% with tissue culture plants. Those plants are going to begin growing right away and you're going to have less issues with this adaptation phase, this transformation phase, which we talked about versus the hydroponically grown plants. So that's one of the reasons I love the 1-2 Grow. It's probably worth a whole episode to itself, actually, the tissue culture plants. Maybe we'll cover that in season two at some point.
And George, you touched on the ammonia spikes and soil. So is there a connection there?
Yeah, there is. I mean, we talked about substrates in a specific episode and we talked about this in some detail. But just to refresh, most aqua soil type products. So we're talking things like Tropica Aquarium Soil, ADA Aqua Soil Amazonia. There's lots of other brands out there. Many of them are very rich in nitrogen because of the way where they come from. They're basically pelletized volcanic ash that's been baked in and pelletized into small balls. And depending on where they're collected in the world depends on their nitrogen content. Now, some of them have a very, very high nitrogen content. And what happens is when that soil is wet, it's soaked in the aquarium, it's going to leach ammonia. Now, this can trigger algae and it's also toxic for the livestock. So it's important to do your frequent large water changes to dilute that ammonia and also plant really heavily with fast growing plants, and that will use, those plants will help you use that ammonia as a food source as well.
Okay, so it can leak ammonia. I mean, is it high risk or is it?
It's pretty much inevitable for most aquasoils, yeah. Right. And depending on the brand, depends on how much. Tropical aquasoil will leach a little bit. ADA aquasoil, Amazonia, will leach a lot.
Okay.
So it's, I often recommend sort of tropical aquarium soil for more beginners. You still need to do those water changes, but if you miss one, you're not going to like have a huge ammonia spike potentially versus the ADA aquasoil, okay, Amazonia. But good practice to do the large frequent water changes anyway in any aquarium at the beginning of its life in particular.
Okay. And what else can trigger algae aquariums?
Yes, loads of things. So number one thing is probably too much light. So that means either the lighting's too intense, there's too much physical light there in terms of how powerful it is, but also leaving the light on for too long. So a lot of, especially new fish keepers, love their aquarium. Of course they do. It's a new thing, it's a new object to look at, and it's beautiful, hopefully. So they like to leave the lights on all day. You know, they'll have it on at 7 in the morning, and then they'll turn it off at, you know, 11 at night. Disaster. That is going to induce algae. You know, plants, most aquariums will be absolutely fine with 8 hours of lighting, and that's what I pretty much do with all our aquariums at home, and it's what I recommend to all our clients, 8 hours a day. Much more than that and you're going to be treading a fine line with algae, much less than that and you're not going to be achieving optimum growth. So that's the length of time, that's called the photo period. So too long a photo period can help, will help trigger algae. And probably even more of a risk is too much intensity of light. If you remember, we always talked about balance. So the more light you have, the more CO2 and nutrients you need, and you need lots of plants to be able to use that light up. So if, let's take the worst case example that you could have, an aquarium with a really, really super bright light. Let's go back to our original idea of the 20-gallon or 80-litre aquarium. Let's say we've got 200 watts of LED light on there. That is ridiculous. No one ever needs that much light, but you can, that is achievable.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you've got one Anubias plant in there and you've got no CO2 injection and you're not adding any fertilisers. Okay, this is a worst case scenario. So there's nothing, that Anubias is a very, very slow growing plant naturally. Even though you're bombarding it with loads of light, that plant can't physically use that light because it's got no CO2. It's naturally a slow growing plant and there's no fertilisers either for it to use to grow. So what can use that light?
Algae.
Exactly. And I can guarantee anyone that will have a 200 watt LED light over their 20 gallon aquarium with one Anubias plant, they will be absolutely punished with algae.
It'll be a hotbed of algae.
It will, exactly.
An algae fest.
Opposite, let's talk about one of our, let's talk about our own 20 gallon aquarium right here, right in front of us now, Emma. We've got slow growing plants in there, all easy category. We've got low levels of light. We've got good levels of CO2 injection, good levels of liquid fertilizer, very high plant density. All those growing conditions are basically optimal for zero algae because there's so many plants in there, but they're growing really, really healthily, even with low levels of lighting. It's just, they're just fighting off the algae. Mm-hmm. There's hardly a speck of algae on there, even on the Anubias leaves, you know, which is very common. Slow growing plants tend to be covered in algae more quickly because they don't have that ability to fight off the algae. So even the Anubias is virtually algae free. The only thing we really get algae wise on there is the glass and the CO2 ceramic disc, the diffuser.
And so would the algae actually kill off the plant, or does it just not look very nice?
It's more an aesthetic thing. It could get to the point where if you completely neglected an aquarium and the plants, and that algae is so prolific that it's physically covering that plant and blocking the light from that plant, then obviously that plant's going to die because it needs the light to photosynthesize. I'd like to think most people would do some sort of remedial action before that happens. A good example though is the blue-green algae. A good example is the blue-green algae, the cyanobacteria. That, because of the nature of its growth and growing in sheets over plants, over the hardscape, very, very quickly, that can smother the light and out-compete those plants for nutrients. So Yeah, that's an exception, but that isn't an algae. We'll talk about cyanobacteria in a minute in more detail because it is a really important thing. We'll talk about how we treat algae in a minute. Other reasons that people get algae, so we talked about too much light, lack of fertilisers. So often a lot of the kind of old school thinking was too much fertilisers will cause algae. Well, actually, it's almost the opposite. So if you have a healthy planted aquarium, you have lots of aquarium plants in there, they need feeding with liquid fertilisers. You could add a little bit too many fertilisers, but those plants exhibit luxury uptake, so they actually have the ability to take in more than they need. But if you didn't give them enough, then they're going to struggle. You'll get pale leaves, you might get some holes in the leaves, and a poorly plant often leads to algae. Don't quote me on this, but I have read that a poorly plant will leach certain chemicals which will attract algae as well. Like I said, don't quote me on that. It's anecdotal, like an anecdotal story I read somewhere on a forum. But it does make sense. And you will find often that if you look in an aquarium and you look at all the plants in detail, where you see the algae growing on the plant will often be on the least healthy leaves. Okay. So you might see some yellow spots, or you might just see some pale growth or a damaged leaf. That will often be the first area where algae will start. Okay. So it does kind of make sense from an anecdotal perspective.
Okay.
Other triggers for algae or other causes I want to talk about are temperature related. So the warmer the water, the more risk of algae you get. Now the reason for that is all living processes that are occurring in the aquarium are all controlled by the temperature. So the warmer the water, the higher the metabolic processes are. So the more waste the fish are producing, the more oxygen the fish are demanding, and the more nutrients the plants are demanding, the more CO2 the plants are demanding. And everything happens quicker, more quickly, the warmer the water. And algae growth happens more quickly. And another disadvantage to having warmer water is oxygen levels in the water are lower. Now, algae tends to thrive in lower oxygen conditions as well. So this is why I always recommend to everyone, always try to run your aquarium on the coolest side that your fish will be comfortable with. So as I always say in all the podcasts, if we're looking after fish, shrimp, etc., you know, these are living entities and we have a duty of care to give them the best environment we can. So do your research, find out what the minimum temperature that fish or shrimp is comfortable with, and run your aquarium at that temperature. And all plants will be finer in cooler water. A lot of plants won't tolerate warmer water.
Okay.
So, for instance, we run ours at around 23, 24 degrees Celsius. I forget what Fahrenheit is of that, but our US friends can do the maths. Or do the math if they're from America. No? Edit that bit out. So, yeah, we like to run ours at... Let me just do some. So we like to run our aquariums around 23, 24 Celsius, which is around 73 to 75 degrees Fahrenheit. There are obviously exceptions to that. We're getting discus aquarium. We're setting up a discus tank soon where we'll be running at least 28 Celsius, which is 82 Fahrenheit. And therefore, because of that, we talked about all those metabolic processes are occurring more quickly. And this is why discus are a real challenge. Because they like warmer water, they're a messy fish to start with, and they like a really protein-rich diet.
Yeah.
And protein is actually a prerequisite to ammonia. So those kind of three things are a trifecta of algae risk. So for that reason, this is one of the major reasons we like to do big, frequent water changes in our discus aquarium, to keep those waste organics lower, to keep oxygen levels up, and just to reduce the risk of algae and obviously keep those fish as healthy as we can.
And probably a reason why we only have a discus tank once every few years. Because yeah. It's hard work.
Yeah, it is. But we've got Harrison to help do our water changes now. So yeah, he'll be earning his money, especially when we get that tank.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Other triggers for algae? We talked about temperature. We talked about plant growth, maintenance, lack of maintenance. We talked about water changes in a lot of detail. Just to re-emphasise, the more water changes you can do, the bigger those water changes are. Obviously, make sure you know you're using appropriate... obviously, do those water changes... When you're doing your water changes, make sure When you're doing the water changes, make sure the water is at an equal temperature as much as possible, and make sure you dechlorinate it. My personal favourite dechlorinator is the Fritz ACCR, which is a great product because it's not diluted with any liquid. It's just a pure powder form, so really efficient, and you can treat literally hundreds of gallons with a couple of spoonfuls of this really good dechlorinator. So yeah, big water changes, frequent water changes, the lowest temperature that your fish will be happy with, lots of plants, fast growing plants, especially in the beginning, and just really focusing on that double whammy of super healthy plant growth and super good maintenance. Speaking of maintenance, filter maintenance is essential for helping to prevent algae. What can happen is in an old stale filter, when all of that crud has been collected in that filter, that's a hotbed for bacteria, and that bacteria actually consumes a lot of oxygen, and we talked about low oxygen conditions maybe triggering algae as well. So there's lots of anecdotal evidence that suggests that a very dirty filter will trigger staghorn algae, which is quite a tricky form of algae to deal with. Most planted aquarium keepers have suffered with this at some point, but yeah, a lot of evidence suggesting that dirty filters are a cause of that. So yeah, that is the main causes of algae. And as with always, with any issue in the aquarium, always better to prevent them from happening in the first place and always address the cause and not the symptom.
I like the use of the word crud, George. Is that a technical aquarium term?
Crud, yes. Very technical.
Fabulous.
Crud. Did I actually say crud?
You said the word crud.
Oh, I meant crap.
Oh, crud's nice.
Crud's nice.
Yeah.
Not as crude.
No, that's crap. A bit more polite.
Yes.
Okay, where are we then?
So we talked about the best way to prevent it. We talked about that already. So let's talk about treating the algae now. Okay.
Okay, so talk to us about how you can treat algae. I know before now you've sort of had lots of different techniques, and you've chucked a blanket over an aquarium before to completely black it out.
Yeah.
So what are the different methods I can use?
Yeah, it really depends on the type of algae. But the majority of it can be treated with good plant growth. Now, people listening might be after a silver bullet to kill their algae. And unfortunately, I'm not going to give you that. A lot of it is hard work and perseverance, but you'll be rewarded at the end with an algae-free aquarium that you've achieved by focusing on the two main things, good plant growth and good maintenance.
But if I have got algae, though, I've got to get rid of it, haven't I?
Yeah.
So I've got to roll up my sleeves,
and
get my toothbrush out and literally get rid of it from the glassware or the plants or rocks and stones.
So the first step is actually manually removing as much algae as you can. So this could be literally, like you said, a toothbrush. Obviously a toothbrush dedicated to the aquarium and not brushing your teeth. You can just use your fingers, and you're just basically removing as much of that algae as physically possible, wiping down the glass, using a toothbrush on the rocks, the wood and the plants. Top tip, if a plant is really covered in algae and it's really tricky to remove that algae, and just get rid of that plant and buy a new one.
Or snip the poorly leaf off.
Yeah, use sharp scissors, trim it off at the stem potentially, as clean a cut as you can, and that will hopefully generate new leaf growth as well. So you're manually removing as much of the algae as you can. You're potentially trimming the plants or replacing the plants. Do some filter maintenance, and then, as I reinforced in the episode on maintenance, the last thing you should be doing, do you remember what it is? As part of the maintenance practice when you've been dealing with algae?
Oh God, I don't know. I can't remember.
Water change.
Oh, well, yes, obviously. Sorry, I thought there was something more technical than that.
No, just the water change. If in doubt, water change.
Yeah.
Yeah. So by the action of you messing around in that aquarium, you're lifting up waste organics from the substrate.
Yeah.
You know, you're actually moving algae around the aquarium. It's free floating now in that aquarium. That's getting sucked into the filter. We need to do a huge water change, and we need to clean the filter as well. After you've done any kind of algae maintenance, that's what I always do. Do at least a 50% water change, if not more, and clean the filter as well. That is going to reduce the risk of any floating algae spores reinfesting elsewhere in the aquarium. So that's step number one, is manually removing the algae. Step number two, really quite straightforward, but potentially expensive. plant more heavily with fast-growing plants. So the reason you've addressed the cause of the algae in the first place, which is probably down to poor plant growth, put more plants in, make sure they're fast-growing, easy stem plants or maybe some floating plants. Once you've done that, then you need to look at your system as an overall thing.
But just on that though, George, I need to get rid of the algae first. I can't just chuck a load of new plants in.
Yeah, we've removed as much of the algae as
we can. Yeah, so you've absolutely got to get rid.
Yeah.
And so then...
And then plant with more healthy plants. Okay. Yeah. So hopefully the aquarium's looking nice and clean.
Yeah.
You've trimmed back all the unhealthy growth. You've cleaned the hardscape, done a huge water change, clean your filter. That aquarium is now looking almost algae-free. That's where you should be at.
Yeah.
Then you put your new fresh plants in. Make sure those plants are appropriate for your growing conditions. So don't be planting loads of advanced plants if you've got no CO2 injection or low lighting. Even if you do have a high energy system with lots of light, lots of CO2, you know, all the good stuff, I would still plant very easy, fast growing plants because these are the best battle against algae. Great example, actually, when we had the Aquascopa 1200 a couple of years ago, we went through a really bad algae phase. And the reason for that was I did a rescape and I didn't have any fast growing stems in there, any fast growing weeds in there. And rather than treating the algae with chemicals or, you know, nasty stuff or blackouts, I just put in literally, I think, 20 pots of a mixture of fast growing stem plants. Within a week, the algae had disappeared and we just saw loads of beautiful, fresh plant growth. Other causes of the algae, which we need to look at. We talked about too much light. We need to look at the balance as a whole. So always look at the cause of the algae to start with before you can start treating it. So why did you get algae in the first place? If it was a lack of maintenance, then you know what you need to do. If it's not a lack of maintenance, then it might be a lack of plant growth. We know what to do now. We need to plant more plants and make sure they're appropriate for the system. If it's not that, then it's something wrong with your system as a whole in terms of the hardware. So you might have an imbalance of light, nutrients and CO2. And we talk about balance a lot in aquariums. So if you do have high levels of light, do you have enough CO2? If you have CO2, is that CO2 getting around the aquarium appropriately? Do you have enough circulation? So that we did an episode on filtration and circulation. I recommend that. But so circulation is a really important aspect in helping to reduce the risk of algae because it's part of that whole growing system. So it's worth talking about this in more detail, actually. With the nature of the internet, we get asked questions that they're hopeful of just an easy one-liner answer. You know, how do I get rid of algae? You know, it's not there's no binary answer to that. It's always, you have to look at the system as a whole. You have to look at the history of that system. You have to look at the present, what's going on. And then you have to think about the future. And you have to, you just have to think about all of those elements that come in together to grow those plants as healthy as you can. And that's when you think about the balance. That's when you think about the hardware that you're running. And it, unfortunately, it's not an easy one answer fits all. You know, there's not like a flow chart that you can follow and guarantee results. You have to think system-wise, you know, and that is quite tricky for beginners and it's quite intimidating. But going back to the fundamentals, healthy plant growth, good maintenance, that's what it comes down to.
Brilliant. So going back to the blanket over the tank, which I know was a few years ago now, but why did you do that?
So that was to deal with blue-green algae, or cyanobacteria, which we said isn't actually an algae, it's a photosynthetic bacteria. So to starve it of light, we put a blanket over it, or you can use newspaper, but basically you're just blocking every available light from reaching the aquarium. And we do that for 72 hours. So for those that are listening at home, if you do have blue-green algae or cyanobacteria or slime algae, whatever you want to call it, the blackout method is very effective. What you need to do is remove, again, manually as much of that blue-green algae as possible, do a large water change, clean the filter, then you can black your aquarium out using newspapers or a blanket for 72 hours. Turn off your CO2, turn off the aquarium lights, obviously, because that's defeating the object of a blackout. maybe put an air stone in there to increase oxygen levels, because the plants aren't going to be growing, so they're not going to be producing any oxygen. So you may want to put an extra air stone in there, an air pump, or maybe an extra filter. Wait 72 hours, remove the blankets or your newspaper or whatever, and then you should have absolutely no residue of any blue-green algae left.
And would the fish be okay in that 72-hour period?
Yeah, then they'll be fine with no food either. Don't, okay. No peeking. Don't even lift up the blanket to make sure everything's okay. Okay. Just rest assured, 72 hours, complete darkness. That's going to kill all of the cyanobacteria off. And then what we need to do is do another water change and another filter clean. And then address, really important, then address the cause of that cyanobacteria. And that could be too much light, especially ambient light hitting the substrate. So, you know, the substrate is up against the glass. Mm-hmm. Now, all cyanobacteria starts off in the substrate. And because cyanobacteria is photosynthetic, that light hitting the substrate can trigger the blue-green algae. Now, what I've done before is actually put a very neat black tape around the substrate to block any light from hitting it, so it would never trigger the cyanobacteria. Now, that doesn't look very attractive in a lot of aquarium systems, so you just need to be mindful of where you're positioning your aquarium in your home or your living space. Make sure there's not excessive ambient light hitting that substrate. Anecdotal evidence again suggests low nitrogen levels can trigger it as well. So if you've got a healthy planted tank system, make sure you're dosing nitrates or another nitrogen form appropriately. Good circulation as well. It tends to thrive in areas of poor circulation, so make sure you've got plenty of circulation. And just generally good maintenance. Keeping on top of your water changes, keeping your filter clean, substrate maintenance as well. You know, waving your hand just above the soil to lift up all that waste organics, siphoning that out as part of the water change. Do all of those things and you should never experience blue-green algae again.
Which you haven't done.
I haven't done for years, thank God. When I started the hobby, I probably had 4 or 5 episodes of it, one after the other, and I did a complete tank strip down every time. Not everyone's got the patience for that. And if I wasn't such a kind of tenacious, persistent character, I could have given up and I wouldn't be doing this right now. So that's one of the reasons I'm passionate about educating people about algae.
So it all sounds like a lot of hard work, George. Are there any shortcuts we can take? Is there any chemicals we can buy or any other treatments available?
Absolutely not. Just all down to hard work. No, there are products labelled as algaecides. There is a product group called liquid carbon, or it's marketed as liquid CO2. It's basically a diluted glutaraldehyde product, which is a very dangerous biocide. And it's marketed to help plants grow. Now, that is a debate on its own, which I'm not going to go into right now. But it is an algaecide and it will kill algae. But it's a dangerous chemical and I would never recommend it personally, and I would never advocate its use on this podcast. I have used it in the past. I've used it to spot treat, in particular blackbeard algae or black brush algae. But in my experience, the best way to deal with algae in the long term is to focus on healthy plant growth. And even in the shorter term, you know, if you do what we explained earlier, plant with lots more fast growing plants, maybe some floating plants, keep up those water changes, keep everything clean, keep your filter clean, and just really focus on that healthy plant growth and the good maintenance practice, then the algae will gradually just subside on its own accord, and that's a much better environment for the fish and for the system as a whole. And arguably better for you as a person, because you're addressing the cause of the problem rather than the symptom. You know, an algaecide is a sticky plaster. If you don't address the cause, that algae is just going to come back again. So using algaecides, and the same thing applies to algae eaters, actually. So we run Amano shrimp, we have cherry shrimp, but we don't have any algae eating fish. And the reason for that is the algae eating fish themselves contribute to the waste. You could add a load of algae eating fish in your aquarium, they could eat the algae. So in a few days, your algae might disappear. But in the long term, those fish are going to be contributing to potentially one of the causes of algae. So actually, by stocking really kind of low waste producing animals like shrimp and snails, you're not contributing to that kind of trigger in terms of the waste production, because they produce very, very little waste in comparison to fish. And they're always grazing the background levels of algae. So always a good idea to add these from the start to help deal with anything before it gets out of hand, rather than adding them as a treatment, you want to be adding them as a preventative measure.
Okay, so it's good to have some of the algae eating snails then.
And shrimps.
And shrimps. And what about the suckers that suck on the glass?
Yeah, you can get Otocinclus for smaller aquariums. They're a shoaling species and they're actually quite a delicate fish, so I don't usually stock them. You can get bristlenose catfish and there's other plec-type catfish, which are known to eat algae. But again, these are very, very high waste-producing fish, okay. Which in the long term, I would argue, which will actually contribute more to algae rather than helping to deal with it.
Okay, so from a livestock perspective, it's shrimp or snails?
Shrimp and snails are my go-to algae crew, yeah.
So lots of information there, lots of different hints and tips and some technical information as well. If I wanted to read more about this and to really get under the skin of the topic, is there a book that's coming out that may be useful for me to read and reference?
I think there is a book. I think it's called Aquascaping by some chap called George Farmer.
Ah!
Yeah. No, in all seriousness, there is a chapter dedicated to maintenance, and part of that chapter is all about algae. So for those that are interested, page 109.
When is the book coming out, George?
It's coming out on November the 10th. So at the time of recording, almost just over a month away. So if you are interested in buying the book, Aquascaping, published by Skyhorse Publishing, it is available on Amazon right now to pre-order. You can definitely get it on Amazon.com and definitely on Amazon.co.uk. I'm unsure about other countries, but good news, if you are wanting to buy a copy directly from us, you can have the opportunity to buy a signed copy for a limited time. You will be able to purchase that directly from our website, www.georgefarmerstudios.com. So that's www.georgefarmerstudios.com. There will be a link on there where you can buy a signed copy.
And with dedications as well, I guess.
Yeah, and there'll be an option where I can, you know, write anything you'd like on the inside of the book. So there'll be an option to fill that on the form.
And that draws this season to a close, George.
It does. End of season one. We covered almost every aspect, I would say, of how to keep a successful planted aquarium. Thank you so much to everyone that's listened to the episode so far. You can really look forward to season two, where we'll be diving deeper into the world of aquascaping. So now you've learned how to keep your aquarium plants alive and algae free and well maintained, and how to grow these beautiful planted tanks. Now we can focus on the actual creative side of creating a beautiful aquascape. So that will be season two.
And a few bonus episodes as well with different people in the industry that you'll be chatting to.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, a few colleagues and people from, yeah, all kind of parts of the industry. So yeah, I can look forward to more interviews. And yeah, I'm really excited to crack on with season two coming soon.
Me too.
Okay, on that note, I'll say cheerio. You take care.
Keep on scaping.
Cheerio.